This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another Motorsport Magazine podcast. Thank you very much for joining us, and it's going to be a good one today because I'm surrounded by some very important people. On my right is our editor-in-chief, Nigel Roebuck. Next to him is Simon Aaron. I think I call him our roving reporter. But more importantly, on my left is a man we have captured from Autosport Magazine. He has defected. Welcome, Mark Hughes.
Didn't we all?
Well, yeah. Speak for yourself. Yes, he's gone from the weekly turmoil of Autosport to the monthly musings of our delicious Motorsport magazine. So warm welcome, Mark, and we'll be talking to you in just a moment.
Thank you.
Let me tell you about the latest subscription offer. It's a good one because you can get up to 6 editions free, totally free, when you subscribe to Motorsport magazine. There are various options, and I'll try and keep it as simple as I can. There's the print option, obviously, digital, or bundle. A bundle presumably means you get the print and the digital together. And you'll also have access to the soon-to-arrive online archive. I was looking at the archive yesterday with a secret password, and I must say, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, there's every single page from every motorsport magazine since 1924. It's an incredible thing. Anyway, if you'd like to take advantage of all this, go to motorsportmagazine.com or call us in London on 0207 349 8472. Good. Please do subscribe. We need you. Anyway, Mark, welcome to your first ever Motorsport Magazine podcast.
Thank you very much.
Just a fortnight away from the Australian Grand Prix. And I think you'll be going to all the races.
That's right, yes.
This year, yes. To tell us what's happening in Formula One. So let's start with the most obvious question. What on earth is happening in Formula One right now?
Well, that's the delicious thing about it. Nobody really knows. I mean, we've had a few clues, obviously, from the Jerez and Bahrain tests. Clear that Renault has a fundamental problem. They're hopeful of at least getting it respectable by Melbourne, but they are saying there won't be a full fix for several weeks yet. The Mercedes looks strong and reliable. The Ferrari looks reliable, not quite so quick so far. But all the Mercedes-powered teams look in good shape. It's going to be very interesting, I think. But I don't think anybody's confident about putting money down or anything like that.
I have. I've put money on Lewis Hamilton to win the world championship. Anyway, on the front cover of the new Motorsport magazine, you've arrived with something of a bang, actually, because you're calling for a revolution. Can you just tell everybody who hasn't seen the magazine what the main points of your revolution are?
I'm trying to envisage a Formula One that would be a little bit more unpredictable than it has been in recent years, a little less corporate, a little more rebellious, if you like, and harken back the values of an earlier age, but not in terms of technology, keeping the technology, and in fact having the technology more open, but doing it in combination with very severe cost controls, so that the emphasis would be on not on who has the best development budget to iterate or optimize tiny little things of advantage, but to broaden out the canvas a little and have just more technical interest, more variation, and just a less corporate sort of feel about it.
Yes, yeah, good. Nigel Roebuck, you've been watching Grand Prix racing for, I don't know, decades and decades.
A while.
What's your feeling about the new era from what we've seen in Jerez and in Bahrain? Do you feel quite excited by it?
Yeah, absolutely I do. I mean, but I seem to be one of, apparently, comparatively few, who wasn't sort of sad to see the end of the V8s. I never particularly, everybody went on about the noise. I always thought it was a bit sort of hysterical and shrill compared with, you know, engines prior to that. And I much enjoyed the last turbo era.
Yeah.
And I'm quite happy to, you know, to see us go to something new. And I think, you know, if we want, it's interesting actually to think about it, isn't it, that the company that made the great hue and cry about if we don't change we're off was Renault, which is sort of a bit ironic at the moment. But I mean, Honda would not be coming back if we were, you know, if we were still running the V8s and whatnot. So, you know, I find it all very intriguing. The only thing that worries me this year is that I think perhaps it's a bit too draconian in one step. I think they should have cut the team some slack this year in terms of the number of engines they're allowed to use and gearboxes and whatnot, because it's all so new and so complex. And if I have a concern about this year, the one thing that I would not have made as draconian is the 100 kilos of fuel. Because the only aspect of the last turbo era that, you know, everybody remembers, and not well, was the question of fuel economy and sort of, well, what the hell's fuel economy got to do with Grand Prix racing?
Quite.
I accept that it has to come into it, but I just think 100 kilograms is a bit too steep. I don't want to see, you know, a repetition of the early laps of Monaco last year every weekend.
No, absolutely not.
And this year, you know, maybe tyres aren't going to come into it, because maybe this year fuel's going to be the thing that's making them cruise. But we don't want to see them cruise.
Let's complete our first lap of the table. Simon Aaron, from what you've seen so far, do you think that we should all be excited? I mean, we may get a great season. There are a lot of very, very, very clever people involved in this, and I'm sure that the problems we've seen so far are not going to last that long.
I mean, I'm as passionate about all forms of motor racing now as I was when I first discovered sometime in the 1960s that you could stick numbers on the side of cars. I'm looking forward to it as much as Mark and Nigel, just because it's a big step into the unknown. And as Mark said, nobody's quite sure how it might all pan out. Although the Mercedes-powered cars clearly have been the strongest in terms of both speed and durability, you know, even fairly late in the Bahrain test, some of those have been, Mercedes had a couple of problems. Williams missed one day. I can't remember if it was the first or second Bahrain test, the whole day because of a glitch.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody is completely bulletproof. I mean, it could be very embarrassing if, you know, we get to Australia and we end up with literally four or five cars sort of hobbling along trying to make the finish. I don't think it'll come to that because, as you said, this is a sport with some fantastically bright people involved. It's one of the great, most appealing things about Formula One is you're dealing with fantastically bright people.
You are.
And, you know, I'm sure they'll get to the root of it sooner rather than later. I mean, we already saw a huge leap from the Jerez test to Bahrain. I mean, I can't remember what the fastest time was in Jerez. Was it 23.7, Kevin Magnussen, something like that?
23s, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was a little bit faster than GP2 cars were going last time they tested there a year ago.
Mm.
So effectively it was, you know, all right, you've got different ambient conditions and so forth, but effectively they were lapping not much faster than a GP2 car. Yeah. By the time they got to Bahrain for the first test, they were getting close to matching the qualifying times they'd done in Bahrain a year earlier. So they'd gone from GP2 performance to correct F1 performance in the space of a couple of weeks. Now, obviously, we're not going to get that kind of quantum leap now because we're, you know, we're into the laws of diminishing returns. But seeing how quickly things have adapted, I'm sure it'll be within three or four races, you know, it'll all normalise.
Mark, there's been a lot of gloom and doom spoken and written about the current state of Grand Prix racing. Do you feel gloomy about it in the sense that there are quite a few teams that just don't have the money? Do you think it will sort of settle out and
I hope it will settle out. You have to fear for the long-term future of some of the teams the way it is set up at the moment, but there's no reason why it has to be set up that way, and you would hope that common sense will eventually prevail to allow the series to continue to flourish. But yes, at the moment it's very inequitous. The top four teams are fine, the rest are in various states of financial stress, yeah.
But we have to look at this, don't we, against the background of the fact that the World Endurance Championship is getting bigger and better. There are more teams joining in, and you'd have to say that for the major manufacturers, that races like Le Mans having a huge amount of relevance to people who might buy that type of car, for example.
Indeed, and as I think you've got to also think of the young people coming in that you're trying to attract to the sport. And you have things like the FIA has just made the Rallycross a world championship,
yeah.
Which is, you know, gathering, pulling in a lot of interest, yes. Especially from younger people who have been brought up on video games. And I think that you've got to remember that when you're formulating what the future of F1 should be. I think it has to. You have to bring the new generation along with you, and you have to make it relevant and not necessarily just follow what's been successful before.
And one of the points of that is that Formula One has been spectacularly slow to embrace social media, modern YouTube and stuff. I mean, every time a Formula One video goes up on YouTube, Formula One management straight in there to get it taken down. I mean, there are a lot of promotional tools that you can use, social media and such like, which Formula One scarcely embraces at all.
I think there's a bit of complacency there, isn't there? Because we've had huge television audiences for many years up until last year.
But Formula One has always been lousy at A, promotion, and B, anything to do with merchandising.
Mm.
Those are two huge opportunities that it seems to have sidestepped.
I suppose this is the moment then to talk about Bernie Ecclestone, isn't it? I mean, he's obviously coming to the end of his reign. He's 83, apart from any legal situations he may be involved in. That surely is going to make a big difference when he goes, whether it's for the better or for the worse, it'll be completely different.
It will be, no question about it. And one of the amazing things about Bernie is that, I mean, all these years he's been in charge, and I mean, he is such an extraordinarily powerful individual, and yet he still has continued to run it on a real sort of grassroots level. The fact that a journalist can go and hammer on his door and talk to him. You know, a lot of sports are not like that. So it's been a very curious regime, and it will be impossible to duplicate with anybody else, I think. So I mean I expect, you know, as and when it happens initially, there'll probably be, you know, a measure of chaos.
I would think there'd be at least two replacements when the time comes. There'd be probably one business person and one racing person, because I don't think any, as Nigel said, I don't think there's any one single person could have that wraparound grasp of it,
yeah.
Because he's grown it himself. Yes, I can't, even though there's been various names suggested, but I can't believe that the main stakeholders haven't already looked at the contingency of what happens next. I'm sure they've got plans, but we're not privy to them yet.
Perhaps if it's Justin King from Sainsbury's, we'll buy one ticket, get one free.
I had heard that Justin King had been officially discounted.
Nor have I, but I was just speculating.
The only name that ever made any sense to me along the way was, if he could be persuaded to do it, possibly was Ross, but I think Ross is far too smart to, you know, to want to spend his declining years,
sure.
You know, in the middle of a
sure
a hailstorm.
Let's talk about drivers, because for me anyway, they're the most exciting and attractive part of it all. We all like to have our favourite drivers and that kind of stuff. And we got some intriguing situations, Mark, because we got Raikkonen joining Alonso at Ferrari. What's your take on what might or might not occur there?
Oh, I think there will definitely be days where Kimi is faster than Fernando. And when that happens, there's going to be tensions within the team. Let's put it that way. It's not going to be, they're not no longer going to be able to run it the way that they did with Michael and Fernando as a single, everything focused on one guy and the other guy there in support. It's going to have to revert more to how it was when Kimi and old Massa, top of his form, were operating. And having said that, who would I put my money on over the season to prevail? I would say Fernando, but I don't think it will be a whitewash by any means.
The other intriguing one is Hamilton and Rosberg, as ever, at Mercedes-Benz. You know, is Nico really, really as good as everyone thinks he might be, and he could give Lewis a run for the championship?
Well, you know, I was at a party over Christmas time, and somebody said, who's going to win the championship, you know, next year? It's before anybody in any of the cars had run at all. And I mean, God help me. I mean, I said Nico, and I wish to God now I'd put a few where testing's turned out. I wish I'd put a few quid on him and whatever odds I could have got at that time. I think it's interesting. When I saw Weber in January, we were talking about, you know, his life in F1 is over now, but he was talking about, you know, the future. He said Nico.
Really?
Yeah, because he said these things are so complicated and there's so many things to think of, and that guy is unbelievably bright.
You certainly will need to have a brain on board this season.
I think
you?
He's, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody is as quick as Lewis over one lap. I really don't. But I think, I don't know, I think there's more to it than that. And, sure, you know, absolutely. I mean, Nico can be plenty quick when he needs to be.
Yeah.
And he's also very smart. So
I mean, my opinion of Nico, I have to say, is, shall we say, improved since I was sitting here slagging Nigel off for being too much of a Roebuck, too much of a Rosberg fan in this very room 1 year ago. But I think, as Nigel says, Nico is, you know, he speaks five languages, he's eloquent in all of them, he's articulate, he's got wider interests than just motor racing. He's a very bright bloke, and these cars, you know, Sebastian Vettel is a phenomenally bright bloke as well, probably the brightest racing driver I think I've met. And, you know, he's in complex situations we've had with blown diffusers and whatever else in recent years, he's been able to adapt his driving.
Yeah.
Partly through, you know, the hand to eye and everything else, but partly through intellect as well. And Nico's got that, and I think, you know, in the way Formula One is at the moment, I mean, he's very well suited to deal with it, and I think much better than Lewis is.
The other thing about Nico is he's so calm. You know, and he won't get hysterical if things go wrong for two or three races, which some of them is not true of some of them.
And he's unlikely to split up with his girlfriend every other race.
No, that's true.
Agreeing with all those points about Nico, I think Lewis has taken the challenge of it on board. We were talking to him in Brazil last year about it, and he was accepting that it is going to be a more complex game. He was hopeful that because the tyres are going to be more conservative, you're going to be able to lean on the tyres more.
Yeah.
That was his main frustration with the last few seasons. But he definitely was taken on board that he's going to have to prepare and get on the simulator 24/7 and all those things. He understands the scale of challenge, and he actually said, I'm planning to have a winter like I had 06, 07. In other words, his preparation for Formula One, where it was very intense preparation. He said that's got to be the way I approach it this season. So it could well be that although it's the demands are quite complex, if he gets his head around them, because it's not that he lacks a brain, he sometimes chooses not to use it. Yeah. And I think he's capable of getting on top of the challenge. And I just hope that this year generally we do see that come true what he was hoping for the tyres. whereby drivers are no longer driving to a delta determined by the durability of the tyre, and they can actually start leaning on the tyre, even if the fuel economy is it becomes the new limitation. Yep. But hopefully that won't involve the driver driving to a delta. It'll be the software doing that while the driver's still able to drive flat out. If it turns out that is the most efficient way to run a race, I'm not at all sure that it would necessarily go against Lewis.
The other intriguing situation is Button and Magnussen at McLaren, because Kevin Magnussen has been one of the talking points of pre-season testing. I can vouch for the fact that everybody in Denmark's talking about it. What's your feeling? I mean, is he going to put Button in his place, do you think?
I don't know. That's quite a tall order. Button operates at a very high level, although he does have his off weekends. That's his main weakness. Everything coming back from the team suggests they're very, very impressed.
Yeah.
And he's at a high level already. And he's very, very bright and very focused, and he's doing all the right things. And talking to people that have worked with him on the driving side, they say he's a class act, and he will be a top performer more or less straight away. So let's see.
Yeah, can't wait. Nigel.
The other thing that intrigues me this year, of course, in light of our testing, is Hülkenberg.
Yep.
I really want to see Hülkenberg, you know, where he should be.
You're talking about betting a little bit earlier. There's a couple of people in the motorsport office who've already put a tenner each way on Nico for the Melbourne Grand Prix, which is not a silly bet.
That's smart.
Yeah, done from 66 to 1.
66
what?
To 1. And so how much have you put on?
I said a couple of people. I haven't done it yet. I usually miss out on these things.
When was this?
A couple of days ago.
Really?
Welcome to the Motorsport Casino, everybody. Anyway, I believe you can get very good odds on Perez winning in Melbourne.
100.
100 to 1. Okay.
1,000.
Nigel, I wanted to mention Red Bull. I mean, I don't think we need to go through all the... What is old news now is that they've had lots of problems in recent testing. But we might underlined, see Sebastian Vettel having to really fight for his prizes and his points this year, which I'm not sure we've always seen, have we? Because he's had a superior car.
Yes, he has had a superior car, yes. You're quite right. I mean, it might well come to that this year. It's a matter of how long it takes for Red Bull to get them, you know, get themselves together.
Sure. And Renault.
And Renault, and also, you know, how well Sebastian copes with it when it's because if you think about it, his whole life he's essentially gone to a race expecting to win it, hasn't he? Or thinking there's no reason why he can't.
He has had to fight back. I mean, the end of 2010. I mean, he had to come from a long way back. Last couple of races when he was a long way back, and then 2012 in Brazil as well. I mean, after he sort of tripped himself up by falling over Bruno Senna on the first lap, I mean, he had to recover. You know, looking at the way things were after the first couple of laps, you said, okay, this is going to be Fernando Alonso's race, but Seb kept plugging away, and all right, he had a car advantage, but he did all the right things and fought back in adversity. So, you know, he can do it. It'd be bitterly ironic if the double points rule, which we all hate, which has been brought in as a kind of an anti-Vettel measure, kind of, you know, if by some quirk of fate, if by the end of the season Red Bull's got it sorted and he went to the last race 40-odd points behind, won and took the title.
No, please, Bernie, wouldn't it, anyway?
On the technical front, Mark, there's been a lot of talk about, well, you know, Adrian Newey was absolutely brilliant at getting the blown floor to work at its absolute ultimate. Now he doesn't have that. Do you think is that one of the problems they're having, or are they all actually just new car problems?
The problems I've had so far are new car problems. But yes, I mean, taking away the biggest area of advantage that he had, well, it stands to reason that it will hurt. But that's Adrian. He will find where the biggest area of advantage is, and it's presumably somewhere else now, and I'm pretty confident he will find it. And we've already heard a couple of comments from Jensen and Lewis from Bahrain Testing that although their observations of the Red Bull, although it was troubled, there's a couple of corners where they were just, they couldn't believe what he was able to do with it. So it sounds, it's only just waiting for the Renault part of the package to come together and then it's going to be up and away.
Oh no, not again.
That was Ricciardo passing Jensen on the outside.
On the outside,
turn
11. Yeah. And Jensen, I've never seen anybody able to do that before. Which suggests it's got a grip advantage on its work.
The thing that, in a way, has almost surprised me is that historically, you know, if Adrian has had a weakness historically, it's always been that he's been too much of a perfectionist. And he's always been obsessive about tight packaging. Jeez, yeah. I mean, I can remember that right back to the Leighton House days. And in a way, I was sort of, it looks as though to a degree that's caught him out again this time. And I'm in a way surprised, but it's pleasing in the sense that, you know, Adrian never changes his purist approach to it.
Yes, I think his approach is... Sorry, go on.
It's absolutely, he's looking for perfection.
Yeah.
And perhaps you could say, well, the start of a brand new project like this, maybe that was a touch unrealistic and he might have been a bit less, you know, a bit more conservative. But that's him. But he'll make it work in the end. And, I mean, you look at that thing, you look at that car and you already sort of, it just looks like a Red Bull, doesn't he? You look at it and think that's a beautiful...
It looks good.
Beautiful
it looks
piece
good.
Of work.
Yes, yeah.
But it's a matter of when it will do 200 miles quickly.
Sure. I think his whole approach is to take it to where he thinks the limit may be, and then when it's not quite there, he has to bring it back. He's sort of like the design equivalent of Gilles Villeneuve in that sense.
Yes.
You just go a bit too far and then come back a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I think the problems the car's been having, only one of them's, as I understand, is four problems. Three of them are Renault problems and one of them's a Red Bull problem with the cooling, but that's sort of easily solvable. That's in terms of that approach, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not enough cooling. We need a bit more than that, and I think that's where they're at with it.
It's interesting, isn't it? To me, anyway, that a company like Renault, when you look at what they've achieved in Grand Prix racing and in many other areas, it's interesting that they're a fortnight away from the first race and they've got so many problems. Why is this?
There seems to be a feeling coming out that the fact that Renault Sport Viry supplies the teams, as opposed to the situation we have at Mercedes with Brackley and working hand in hand with Brixworth, and at Ferrari, all everything being in house, has come to bite them when you've introduced new engine formula. In other words, the integration between the chassis and engine side has suddenly come to be much, much more important. And all of these Renault problems became apparent only when they put the car on the track and worked perfectly well on the dyno. And I think there was probably a lot more simulation, a lot more trying to replicate track conditions as opposed to dyno at both Ferrari and Mercedes.
I'm sure the average Frenchman would not want to live in Milton Keynes, but maybe that will become necessary.
No, possibly not. But you know, I mean, Mark is absolutely right. But if you could say, well, yes, Renault have got this problem, then in the sense that they are only, you know, a supplier. Mm. But on the other hand, look at the Mercedes and the Williams and the Force India and.
Well, yeah, but I think the point is that it was developed with Brackley.
The team.
Doesn't matter which one, but a team was involved in the development of it, which the other teams then benefited from, the customer teams then benefited from.
Sure.
Okay, let's take some questions from our readers, because we got a lot of them, and they've all taken the trouble to send them in. So here are some of them. Do we think that the quieter soundtrack of the new Formula One will cause an outcry from the fans when they get going in Melbourne? Well, I personally haven't heard the cars live yet, so I can't comment on that.
I think they sound fine. They're quieter, but it's the quality of the noise that's important, not the volume. I think they sound great.
Good.
And I think, from generation to generation of Formula One car, people always moan about something, whether it's the aesthetics or the noise or whatever. You get within 4 or 5 laps of the first practice session in Melbourne, everybody will be acclimatised to the way they look, the way they sound. It'll just be Formula One.
Yep. Okay. Well, that answers Chris Wright. The question came from Chris. Simon asks whether Honda will be hurt by missing the 2014 racing season, or will they actually be helped by having even more time for R&D?
I'd go for option two. I think having a year to watch and see the problems that others, Mercedes, Ferrari, Renault encounter, there's free lessons. I'm sure it'll help them.
It's good. Honda coming back is good, isn't it?
It's great.
It's fantastic.
But it sort of says that Formula One must be doing something right.
Well, the point is Honda would not be coming back if we hadn't changed the engine formula. So,
right.
It's that simple.
I mean, we might see a Ron Dennis-led McLaren Honda winning races again, maybe, in 2015. That'd be history repeating itself.
Yeah, perfectly feasible. Don't see why not.
The only thing that looks less likely now is that Alonso will be driving it.
Yes, it's a lot less likely.
Yeah, since the management change, I think that's sort of disappeared off the radar now.
Well, perhaps we should explain that. There may be some people listening who don't immediately understand that. But, Alonso and Ron Dennis had a big falling out, right, in 2007.
Yes, and Alonso said last year that the reason why he wouldn't dismiss going back to McLaren was that there's no longer the same person in charge then as there was now, but that was then.
And I think Martin Whitmarsh had, was doing a pretty good job in talking him round. I think if there hadn't been this change in McLaren, I would personally have bet on Fernando being in a McLaren.
Yeah, I agree.
You agree?
I think you would have been there.
Okay, right. Kevin Joyce talks about the new harder compounds, and how much do we think the drivers will be able to lean on them as opposed to last year's? I mean, a lot more than last year, obviously.
Yes, and the cars that have been able to put a few laps together, the signs are quite encouraging. You didn't hear any talk about.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah.
Drop off or having to drive to a Delta or, trying to maximize stint time. The tyres seem to be a non-issue, which is hopefully what we'll see in the races.
So that's great for the fans, because we all got a bit fed up with that, didn't we? The whole tyre distraction.
Well, I certainly did, but I kept being told by some people, no, this is great, it's great for the show. I thought it was a farce, frankly. And when I was talking to Prost recently, he made the point, a race a few years ago, neither of us could remember which it was, when Mark Webber was leading with a few laps to go and could have finished and won, but had to come in to go onto the other compound. And Prost said, that's a farce.
Hmm.
What has that got to do with trying to win a Grand Prix?
So that's a positive note.
I think the other thing, because of the increased torque this year, you're still going to have to, we've seen quite a lot of shots of people getting sideways, haven't we?
Hmm.
In testing. I think it's still going to be quite easily possible to abuse your tyres. Okay. Well, actually, if I can just say it, Rob, while I think about it, one of the things I'm really happy about is, by the look of it, these new cars are going to be hugely quicker in a straight line at the sort of top end than the V8s were. And I've always liked it when there's a great disparity between cornering speed and straight line performance.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
It really is, isn't it? Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
I wonder what the speed track will be at Monza.
Well, the old, in the V10, the highest recorded speed was in miles per hour was 234, was Schumacher's Ferrari.
Right.
So, yeah, let's see if that can be beat.
That's pretty quick, isn't it? If you've been to Monza and look, yeah.
That's what they run all day at Indianapolis.
Yes, but they don't have a chicane. They don't have a chicane at the end of it.
They don't have any hard braking for a second gear chicane, do they?
Here's a straightforward one from John Vincent. He wants to know if you think that all the teams will survive to the end of the season. Mark, I mean, is there a possibility we could lose a team? Or
I think there's always that possibility, but I would hope not. As I said earlier on, I would hope that common sense prevails and the realization's there that we need all the teams that are there to remain there.
When you say common sense prevails, though, I mean, surely what we're talking about is just have they got enough money?
Yeah, but it's to do with the income they're receiving, the share that they get of the vast revenues coming in. Yeah. And you can sort of strangle the golden goose, can't you? And I think if the realization dawns that is happening, hopefully it won't quite come to that, I would hope.
Okay. Well, the golden goose is much in everybody's thoughts, isn't it? Because Mr. Ecclestone has a court case in April, isn't he? Another one.
Yes, indeed.
Which could, could spell the end of his regime or not?
Well, yes, it may well do, technically. It depends on the verdict, of course.
Sure.
But yes, you would think if there's any guilty verdict at all, regardless whether it's even if it's merely a fine, you would have to question how he could remain in charge.
Sure.
Well, CVC have already said that if he's found guilty, he's gone. Which is quite something, really, for CVC to be high-minded about anything,
isn't
it?
Quite a strong statement.
It's not their normal way. You know, they just slide their $550 million a year out of it. And
I was going to say they're normally too busy checking the bank balance.
And watch the little teams struggle.
Okay. Nobody can answer this question, but Andrew Bodman wonders if nobody finished the Australian Grand Prix. I mean, it is a possibility, I suppose. Do we know the rules for determining the result if no cars are running after 58 laps?
Well, there's a two-thirds distance rule, isn't there, in terms of half points?
Yes.
Yeah.
So anything from one lap up to two-thirds distance, I think, you would need to check this, but I think is half points.
Right.
After two-thirds distance, it's full points, so it would just stop when the last car stopped.
Yes, that's right.
So if I'm the last to stop, I win.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can fudge your classification based on, count back and you reward points accordingly, sort of.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, we can't ask that question. Colin Cashin asks, will Marussia beat the Red Bulls? Well, I think the answer to that is categorically they won't. I think we'll leave it there, Colin.
Tell you what, I mean, Marussia, they're never going to have a better chance of getting a point than in Melbourne, are they?
It's such you look at them and you think, come on, absolutely. There's a real chance here.
A real chance of getting actual points rather than a
12th, which is better than the 13th of the bedroom or whatever.
No. Sure. I'm all for them getting points, but I don't think they're going to be quicker.
Over the season, I wouldn't have said they're going to be Red
Bull. No. Unless they knew he transfers to Marussia instead of March or something.
I think he's transferring to Ben Ainslie, isn't he? Anyway, where do we think, Mark, where do we think that Ross Brawn and Martin Whitmarsh might end up following their departures from Merck and McLaren, respectively? Do you have a feeling about that?
Ross, I think, will take a year out, like he did before. And if I had to put money on it, I think he will end up at McLaren.
Right.
I would much prefer he ended up at the FIA and tried to sort out the cost controls. But I think he feels that Jean's style is too accommodating. And it's an issue that would need more than just diplomacy. It would need solutions imposed. And I don't think Jean's up for that. And if Jean's not up for that, then Ross isn't up for being part of it. So I would think he will end up accepting what I believe is a very lucrative offer to join McLaren.
I'm sure it'd be lucrative.
As for Martin, yeah, I would expect to see him back in F1, but I haven't a clue.
You would expect to see
him? I would expect to see him back in F1, but I haven't a clue where.
Okay.
That, of course, would be Ross Brawn reuniting with Honda, where there's a bit of previous.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of previous, actually. Yeah. Neil Weingart wants to know, is there any way that the double points, he calls it a travesty, can be undone? Can this... It can be, yeah.
Yes, but it has to be decided before the first race, I believe.
Mm. Before the first race?
Yes, so we're a matter of days and countdown.
Strategy
group had a perfect opportunity to revoke it in January, didn't they? And those meetings that were called by the FIA in Geneva, and they didn't have the balls to bring it up.
It's
that simple.
How far is the disbanding of the Formula One Teams Association significant to what we'll see in the future now, or isn't it? I mean, we don't have FOTA anymore, do we? Is that going to be a...
Yeah, I think it's a sadness. But it's been a very diluted FOTA for quite some time now, ever since Red Bull and then Ferrari and their satellite teams elected to leave. It's been divide and conquer ever since then in terms of the commercial control. So the actual dissolution, the formal dissolution of the group, I think is sad. But I think the main damage had already been done.
Hmm.
I agree. I think, you know, once Red Bull and Ferrari had allowed themselves to be bought off and took their satellite teams with them, it was, you know, the whole thing was just, you know, emasculated, wasn't it? I think it only kept going as long as it did because of Martin Whitmarsh.
Right.
I think he was the driving force behind it, but it was, you know, where are you without Red Bull and Ferrari? You're never going to get anywhere with...
Quite.
A sport governed by Bernie Eccleston.
Quite. What are Fernando Alonso's options if Ferrari fails to give him a car to win the championship again this year? I mean, what would be the repercussions if Ferrari doesn't win and Alonso decides I've had enough?
Well, I think he wouldn't lack for options. I think he could... go pretty much anywhere he liked,
except McLaren. Yeah.
Well, that would be his choice, I think. If he chose not to go to McLaren, I'm sure there's space there for him if he wanted to go. But as we talked about earlier, I don't think that's where he will go. The world's his oyster, really. I think it's more a case of what could Ferrari do to keep him if they had another poor season.
Can we speculate at all on what, I mean, why? What is the problem at Ferrari, bearing in mind they've got huge resources?
Adrian Newey at Red Bull is the problem.
Oh, okay, so...
They're not doing anything particularly badly. They're probably not performing at any lesser level than they were when they were winning championships. I think it's just that the game has moved on since Adrian really got the thing going at Red Bull. And they've tried to recruit him offered him huge amounts of money, and he's just used that to renew his deals with Red Bull. Every time they've done that, he's just got a longer deal at Red Bull.
Ferrari does now have James Allison, very highly rated from Lotus, which might add a tenth or three henceforth.
I mean, I personally thought one of the daftest things that happened last year was I thought Luca's outburst against Fernando was simply absurd. Because I think, I mean, all right, I know Fernando, you know, his patience snapped. But geez, you look at what he's been through the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's more than contributed his end of the deal, hasn't he? And Ferrari fundamentally have, you know, not stepped up. And so he did snap. But I think for Montezemolo to sort of treat him like a schoolboy in disgrace and do it publicly, I thought you don't do that to someone like Alonso. That's a big, big mistake.
That's why I left McLaren. Exactly that. Yeah, attitude.
Absolutely right.
But of course, he is an Italian politician, and
well, yes, Italy changes its prime minister about every 3.5 weeks, doesn't it?
Can we talk a bit about? Come back for a moment to what we're calling at Motorsport Magazine the revolution. Do we honestly think that any of this of the ideas that you've put forward, some of us have put forward, that I mean other people in the media have put forward. Is any of this really likely to happen, do we think?
Yes, comrade.
It's more. See you in Sochi.
I think it's more to put it out there, and it seems to have struck a chord with a lot of followers of the fans of the sport. Yeah. And I think you can't ignore that there's definitely been a bit of a reaction since this double points idea came about, and that seemed to be the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of people. And it's sort of, yeah, well, while we're at it, that's a stupid idea, and so was DRS, and so was silly tyres, and it just seems to have finally cracked a lot of people, where it's become apparent just how artificial it has become over the last few years. And the sport would be well advised to listen to that. And really, we're just reflecting that.
But my question is, will they? Not would they be well advised to, though?
I don't know, is the answer to that. I have no idea.
If television numbers continue to decline, I think they'll realise they've got to do something. Because there was a big, big dip last year in viewing figures. It was exaggerated in certain markets, but I mean, the overall global viewership was down.
And it's not pulling new viewers in. It's not pulling younger people in. Following is aging.
Isn't that because Red Bull win so many races, though? Nobody wants to tune in every fortnight and see the same person win the race, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure there's that as well. I'm sure there's a lot of factors working towards it, but you can tell from the reaction there has been to this double points idea that the artifice is part of what people aren't happy with.
We know revolutions work. As you intimated, comrade, because we have seen a couple work very well in recent months, but they normally work well when the pressure is kept up, or you know, constantly pressure, not from one outburst, which is then allowed to sort of.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah, a campaign, indeed.
So how about the grandstands coming down and standing outside the paddock and refusing to leave until
be right behind you. You lead.
Why not? I say.
I think it's interesting, actually, that you know the problems Formula One has at the moment, the perception of it with you know the public. It seems as though NASCAR has exactly the same problem.
Yes, with the chase,
all sorts of silly ideas to try and you know short attention span, wow, you know, get people's interest. And the existing fans absolutely hate it, and it's not drawing any new ones.
The mood is definitely towards authenticity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just in sport, but in all sorts in sport and in music and
bring all back around real pubs.
Real pubs. In terms of music production, there is a very, very definite swing back towards authenticity. Yeah. And I think this is just part of it. And Formula One seems to be slow to being slow to understand it.
Well, I think, recently Charlie Whiting made a sort of impassioned defense of DRS, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And when I was talking to Prost about it, I mean, he predictably hates the whole idea, but he said, but if we must have it, then let's have it so that it just helps the following driver a little, but absolutely does not make it easy. And in point of fact, I mean, they're opening DRS up this year, so it's going to be, the effect is going to be greater, yeah.
Yeah, I think they've done it because the rear wing is going to be less powerful, so they've felt that they had to give more effect. Because there's less, you're actually dumping less drag for any given amount of flap angle.
Let's take a quick question from Michael Spitali, who asks about the fuel. And I don't think we've really talked properly about the fuel limit, because again, there's a lot of talk about this. You know, will people be running out of fuel?
They won't be running out of fuel because the electronics are sophisticated enough to not allow that. Right. Now, all it'll mean is if you've eaten into your fuel too early, you'll just have very, very little power in the late stages. But the electronics won't actually allow them to run out of fuel.
Right. So we could see someone misjudging it, herring off
Yes, and then being very slow and being a sitting duck in the late stages. Yeah,
and it'll just be like driving around on a set of shredded Pirellis. It'll have the same effect.
You see, the 100 kilos, you would have to... You can't run the engine in full performance mode the whole race. So the strategy becomes about when do you run it at full performance. And the fastest way, if you didn't have any other cars on the track, if you just fastest way of doing 50 laps or whatever, would be to gradually increase it. So to let the fuel load come down first before you then start ramping up the engine performance. That'd be the quickest way to do it.
Yeah.
But if you try and do it like that, run conservative in the early laps, there's all those other inconsiderate idiots are going to turn theirs up and overtake you. So you lose track position. So it's quite a bit of game theory involved in the best way of running your race. So that will be the strategy game.
Maybe Mercedes will miss Ross Brawn on the pit wall because he's a good strategist, isn't he?
Yes, indeed, yes. Yeah.
Actually, we haven't mentioned...
Williams is something that we do need to mention because they've... They've been doing the longest runs. Yep. They've been doing the fastest lap times. I mean, all right, it's testing, so... But it does look... There seems to be a huge impetus behind Williams at the moment. I mean, they haven't announced their major sponsorship deal yet. That's later this week. But they're going to have Martini on the car, as far as we know. They've got Pat Simmons, they've got Rob Smedley, they've nicked a load of good, strong engineers from Lotus.
They've got Bank of Brazil.
They've got a raft of sponsors on board. They've got some really good technical people coming in. Valtteri Bottas, although he hasn't been able to show it very often yet, we know he's the real deal.
And they've got...
You can just see.
Mercedes engine.
And they've got a Mercedes engine.
And Massa are out to make a big point.
Yes.
What's your take on this?
Yeah, I think they're going to have a great season. A much, much stronger season than before. And get some points on the board, and hopefully that's a good foundation for their long-term future, because it's been a bit uncertain, it's been a bit up and down in recent years.
Without wishing to be too nationalistic, I mean, this is actually really very, very happy news, isn't it? I mean, I don't know anyone who wouldn't love to see Williams back at the front, and it would be an extraordinary turnaround, wouldn't it? When you think of the last few years for this team, I mean, well, last year, for example, I think they scored 5 points or something last year.
Yeah, I mean, there was that one-off win the year before at Barcelona.
Okay,
but yes, sustained success, not since 2003, really. It's probably the last really strong season.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
You've got to say, haven't you? I mean, a lot of the... Frank just never, ever... You can imagine he's been...
They still do hold the Interlagos lap record, don't they?
Do they?
Set 10 years ago by Montoya.
Anyway,
you have to wonder as well how Pastor Maldonado must be feeling, having just walked away from that to go and drive a Lotus in which he's managed about 15 laps so far.
Yeah. I'm not so worried about Pastor Maldonado. Anyway, good.
I'm just glad Hülkenberg didn't do it, as it's turned out.
Well, yes.
I'm very glad, you know, he's where he is and not where he could have been.
Yes, okay. Seeing as we're so close to the first race of the year, and this after all is our season preview podcast, which is why we're focusing on Formula One completely. Mark, do you have any gut feeling about how this first race might go away from the dramatic headlines? Do you have a sort of gut feeling about how it may pan out or not?
Competitively, you mean? I think we'll just see a continuation of what we saw in Bahrain, where the Mercedes teams are very strong, particularly the works team.
Yeah.
I think it's all to play for, but I would say Mercedes go into it as heavy favourites.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. How many improvements can a team make without being at the track, with bearing in mind how sophisticated the simulators are these days? I mean, presumably Red Bull are on the simulator day and night.
They all are, yeah. I mean, a lot. And as we talked, going back to what Simon said before, you saw the progress that was made between Jerez and Bahrain. They're very, very powerful tools, so yes, the development rate will be extraordinary.
When the revolution comes, will we ban simulators?
We won't explicitly ban them. We'll just say, here's your budget. You can use it however you want.
Yeah. Okay. What's your gut feeling about the first couple of races, Nigel? I mean, presumably you'll be glued to the...
Oh, of course. I mean, I honestly don't. I'm just like Mark. I mean, I based on testing, you have to assume that, you know, Mercedes the Mercedes teams and Mercedes themselves particularly have to start as favourites. I'm intrigued to know, you know, exactly what we have or haven't seen of the Ferrari yet. You know, I mean, he went out on super soft tyres and all the rest and did a sort of simulated qualifying run. So we assume that, you know, that was what the car has, in which case it's not quite with the Mercedes. But you never know with, you know, they've got two superb drivers, Ferrari.
They have.
And also to, you know, they're both bright. They're both bright racing drivers. I mean, they're not going to struggle to, but certainly not as much as some of the others to sort of figure out how to make it all work.
Let's hope Red Bull doesn't win, or we're all going to look pretty stupid, aren't we?
I mean, I'm about to go away and put a bet on a couple of the Mercedes teams with longer odds, so that'll probably scupper their chances. So I suggest that means the works team will win.
Let's face it, none of us know what's going to happen, but we're all...
We really don't, do we?
That's good, isn't it? That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
what we want.
I mean, you can't point to a single team and say, well, we know whatever else, they are absolutely reliable.
No, and you can't always point to Man City football team and say they're going to win every match, because they don't. I mean, unpredictability is what we all want. Absolutely, it's what sport's all about, isn't it?
And I think it's good in a better way than it was at the start of 2012, when we had a different winner at each of the first of the seven races. But each time, it was just kind of a corollary of melting tyres and stuff. And now you know that it's unpredictable, but you know that everybody's going to be, the drivers are going to be pushing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, pretty much flat out the whole race. And I think it's more, as Mark said earlier, it's a more authentic contest with the unpredictability, whereas what we had at the start of 2012...
Yeah, it was a lottery.
It was a lottery. It was unpredictable, but it didn't
feel
real.
It wasn't based on merit.
It was absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It seems to me, from what I've read and what I've seen and what I've heard and people I've spoken to, it seems to me that its brains are going to win this championship.
I think so, yes. I think very much so.
Because a lot of the best decisions are going to be made on the pit wall, aren't they?
Pit wall and driver. I think driver's got a lot to do, yeah.
And the driver.
Yeah.
So all of this suggests that the bright boys will be at the front.
Yeah, you still need a fast car, but to get the results, yes. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah.
And if you're thinking in those terms, you would think I would think in terms of both Ferrari drivers and Rosberg. And Vettel and perhaps Jensen.
For sure, yeah. Formula One goes cerebral. I like it.
Well, for sure, this year it's going to be...
Yeah.
It is going to be cerebral.
Good, good. Okay, before we go, can we just go around the table and each have our sort of... look back at what's happened over the winter and what's going to happen this season. And on the technical front, Mark, can you just run through with us what all these main changes are, just so that everybody understands the major differences between the 2013 car and the 2014 car?
The biggest difference, of course, is the engines. So we've gone from V8, 2.4 V8. Normally aspirated to 1.6 V6 turbo with hugely more powerful hybrid energy, which is taken not just from the braking as before, but also from the heat from the turbo. We've got 600 horsepower from the engine itself and about 160 more from the hybrid, a lot more torque, so a lot more demanding of the driver's throttle foot. Trickier to control through the corners. Aerodynamically, they've lost a lot of downforce, front wings narrower. The cooling capacity has increased enormously, so the side pods are much bigger, which means that the airflow has a struggle to get to the back, which limits rear downforce. And beam wing has gone from the back, which further reduces downforce. So, yes, slow through the corners, faster out of them.
Will we see some sideways stuff?
I'm sure we will. I mean, Kimi, he had a big accident at Bahrain, and he said that was absolutely, I just got too much throttle on there.
It'll be interesting the first time we see them run in the wet, won't it?
Yeah, really, that is going to be good.
Seriously,
especially if it's a cold day.
Yeah.
They've also got fixed gear ratios as well, which is a first. The gear ratios are pre-specified at the start of the season. Yeah. Can't be changed from race to race. But with
eight,
all the
eight of them.
You've actually got an eight-speed gearbox. Yeah, that's right. But with all the extra torque, I mean, they're going to remain very drivable, I'd have thought.
Yeah, very. And you can fill in the torque curve of the engine with the electronics as well. So that's the software. There will be a more drivable engine.
Okay. I want to take one final question from someone who claims his name is Maurice Minor. Clearly it's not Maurice Minor, but anyway.
Hasn't Triumph Herald written in this week?
Because we are a historical magazine as well as a contemporary magazine, he wants to know what other season were we anticipating so eagerly? Because I get a sense around the table, we are pretty eager. We are anticipating this one rather eagerly. I mean, he's dying to get on the plane, I can tell. Nigel's dying to go to Russia, aren't you, Nigel?
Would anybody bet on there being a race in Russia at this point?
Yes, I'm sure there'll be a race in Russia.
Well, yes, I mean, Bernie does say. I mean, Bernie must be the only person in recorded history to have described Putin as super guy. Super guy, yeah.
Well, I'm not getting involved in anything.
But I mean, as things stand, you know, I wouldn't bet on there being a race in Russia.
I'm sure there will be. I'm sure there will.
I imagine it'll be sorted out by then.
I remember when there was a bit of tension in Korea and there was questions about whether the first Korean Grand Prix would happen, and he was asked, do you think it would happen? He said, oh, yeah, I think we'll keep an eye on it, but yes, it'll be fine. So on what point would you consider it? We wouldn't go ahead. He said, when the tanks went in. Mm. So, you know, there we are.
Well, I seem to remember the same about Bahrain, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What was the question? Oh, yes, okay. Simon, when were you last sort of on tenterhooks about a Grand Prix season?
To be honest, I always am, but I can't remember whether the last time I was quite as curious as I am now. I can remember what happened in 1974. Everything else is too recent, so I'm sorry. Can't help you.
It's a very bad answer, if you don't mind me saying.
It's appalling answer. It's the only one I've got.
Well, I can't ever remember a season where it was just so much of an unknown, so much up in the air.
Yeah. Mm.
You agree?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, not at any point.
You've thrown a completely new technology at everybody at the same time. Yeah. And just said, sort it out. So, yeah, I agree. I always look forward to the new season. But I can't recall one where pretty much everyone, including the people involved in it, including participants, have said, I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, this is great news, isn't it?
I mean,
isn't it good we don't know what's going to happen? If we knew what was going to happen, we wouldn't bother watching it.
As I was say, it's a very striking contrast. Just go back to 12, 14 years, beginning of the 2000s, when we got on the plane to Australia, and you kind of knew, you know, a week in advance that you were going to be watching Michael Schumacher and Ferrari.
Yeah.
Maybe not winning the race, but certainly setting the pace. And it was kind of, you know, 2002, 2004 was the same. You kind of knew that. And it was, you travelled every time, knowing pretty much what was going to happen.
Well, same with Vettel and Red Bull, surely. I mean, yes.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Nobody wants that. Right.
Christian Horner possibly did, but.
Well, yes. Okay.
Well, I would really like to see a Williams win in Melbourne.
So would I.
I really would.
So would I. I would love it. Yeah, it'd be terrific. Well, you never know, do you?
Massa was 33 the last time I looked.
What about Bottas?
He was 66, I think. He was 50-odd, maybe.
There's clearly going to be a lot of money going into the betting shop this afternoon from this particular office. None of mine included. Okay, well, thank you very much, everybody. Bring it on. Bring on the revolution. Bring on the season. And let's see what happens. And, Mark, we look forward to your writing in the magazine. You'll have more space.
Indeed. Fantastic.
A lot more space, actually. Yeah. And Nigel, of course, will be with us, as usual, throughout the season with his Roebuck take on whatever happens out there. And Simon and I will be here as well, we hope. Good. Well, we'll see you next time for our April podcast. And don't forget that you can get 6 issues of our magazine completely free when you subscribe. And we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye-bye. Stand up, boss. Stand up, boss. Stand up.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.